We're reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 5, entitled Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness, text number 29. Okaram jaga tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam Yakva mam shantim vrichati bhaktaram gagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam Yakva mam shantim vrichati bhaktaram the beneficiary Jaga of sacrifices, tapasam, and penances and austerities, sarvaloka, of all planets and the demigods thereof, Mahishwaram, the Supreme Lord, Suridam, the benefactor, Sarva, of all. Bhutanam, the living entities. Kyatva, thus knowing. Mam, me. Lord Krishna. Shantim, relief from material pains. Vrishati, one achieves. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Translation, a person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Purport. The conditioned souls within the clutches of illusory energy are all anxious to attain peace in the material world, but they do not know the formula for peace, which is explained in this part of the Bhagavad Gita. The greatest peace formula is simply this. Lord Krishna is the beneficiary in all human activities. Men should offer everything to the transcendental service of the Lord because He is the proprietor of all planets and the demigods thereon. No one is greater than He. He is greater than the greatest of the demigods, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. In the Vedas, Svetasvatara Upanishad, 6, number 7, the Supreme Lord is described as Tam Ishvaranam Paramam Maheshwaram. Under the spell of illusion, the living entities are trying to be the lords of all they survey, but actually they are dominated by the material energy of the Lord. The Lord is the master of material nature, and the conditioned souls are under the stringent rules of material nature. Unless one understands these bare facts, it is not possible to achieve peace in the world, either individually or collectively. This is the sense of Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna is the supreme predominator, and all living entities, including the great demigods, are His subordinates. One can attain perfect peace only in complete Krishna consciousness. This fifth chapter is a practical explanation of Krishna consciousness, generally known as Karma Yoga. The question of mental speculation as to how Karma Yoga can give liberation is answered herewith. To work in Krishna consciousness is to work with the complete knowledge of the Lord as the predominator. Such work is not different from transcendental knowledge. Direct Krishna consciousness is Bhakti Yoga, and Jnana Yoga is the path leading to Bhakti Yoga. Krishna consciousness means to work in full knowledge of one's relationship with the Supreme Absolute, and the perfection of this consciousness is full knowledge of Krishna, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A pure soul is the eternal servant of God as his fragmental part and parcel. He comes into contact with Maya, illusion, due to the desire to lord it over Maya, and that is the cause of his many sufferings. As long as he is in contact with matter, he has to execute work in terms of material necessities. Krishna consciousness, however, brings one into spiritual life even while one is within the jurisdiction of matter, or is in arousing a spiritual existence by practice in the material world. The more one is advanced, the more he is freed from the clutches of matter. The Lord is not partial toward anyone. Everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness, which helps one to control the senses in every respect and conquer the influence of desire and anger. And one who stands fast in Krishna consciousness, controlling the above-mentioned passions, remains factually in the transcendental stage or Brahman Nirvana. The Eightfold Yoga mysticism is automatically practiced in Krishna consciousness because the ultimate purpose is served. There is a gradual process of elevation in the practice of Yam, Niyam, Asana, Pranayam, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. But these only preface perfection by devotional service, which alone can reward peace to the human being. It is the highest perfection of life. Translation
in Sanskrit once again. Boktram dukatapa sam sarva loka maheshwaram suridam sarabhutanam gyatvamam shantim richati.
A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Purusthaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvisesa Shunyavadi Paskatya De Satarne.
This is the peace formula that's being given here. This is the peace formula recommended by the Bhagavad Gita. To know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that we are His eternal servants. That one who actually comes to realize these things, that he automatically becomes peaceful. This is not easy for the conditioned soul to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that we are also spiritual, eternal servants of Krishna. But this is the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, and in the Bhagavad Gita there is practical advice how one can live one's life to actually come to the realization of these principles. The first principle, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is explained in the Bhagavad Gita, that, or the first principle we should go over is the fact that we are not this body. Due to illusion, we are misidentifying ourselves with this body, and therefore we are not understanding our actual position as a spiritual being. In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has explained, Deinosminita dehe komaram yovanam dhara tata dahantara praptira dhirya satra namuyati. The embodied soul is continuously passing in his body as the body goes from boyhood to youth to old age. So similarly, the soul will enter into another body at the time of death. A self-realized soul, he is not bewildered by all these different changes. Therefore, we could try to understand that we are in a body now. We all have experience that we've had a little baby body, a 15-year-old body, now we have this body, and in the future we'll have another body. Every moment, actually, our body is changing. And in the course of time, it becomes more obvious. But we, who are perceiving this body, who are within the body, we're always the same. That which we're perceiving, that which we're conscious of, this body, that is always different. But the soul is always the same. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ita prakasha yekam krishnam ekal imaravi. Kshetra kshetrita krishnam prakashiti bharata. Just like the sun is in one place and it illuminates the whole universe with its sunlight, so the soul, who's in one place in the body, in the heart region, he's illuminating the entire body with his consciousness. Because we are spiritual, therefore we have consciousness, and now we are conscious of this body, or conscious of the subtle mind. But we are not, in, due to illusion, fully conscious of ourselves. So Bhagavad Gita is meant to bring us to awareness of oneself as a spiritual being. And the second principle, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is also explained in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetu nanena kunteya digati pari vartate. That this material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my control, and by its rule, this creation is manifested and annihilated again and again. Sometimes there are some theories that there is no God. Actually, principally, people think, because they are so much engrossed in this bodily conception of life, when they hear about a Supreme Personality of Godhead who has an all-blissful, all-knowing, eternal form, they cannot conceive of such a form. They naturally think of God as something of a personality or something with a material body like we have. Or else they conceive that God is the all-pervading spirit and that we become aware of him in the same way that bubbles merge into the ocean. But these are not actually true. God is actually the controller behind it. We can at least understand God's existence or Krishna's existence. When we say Krishna, we don't refer to any sectarian personality. We refer to the same personality that all scriptures refer to, whether he's called Jehovah or Allah or Yahweh or Krishna or Rama. It is the same personality of Godhead. There's one God. That God is the same person who's created this universe under his energy, by his power, the universe is maintained, and by his will, and many years from now, the universe will be annihilated. So that Supreme Personality of Godhead can be perceived in many different ways. One of the ways we can perceive him is how he's working through his material energy. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Gamavisha Chabhutani Daryam Yaham Ojasa Pushnami Chosidi Sarva Samo Putva Prasatmakaha. That I enter into the planets, and by my energy, these planets stay in orbit. So if we look up in the sky, we'll see that there are so many planets, and as the scientists will tell us, that each one of these planets, they're moving exactly according to some specified orbit. If this, they have something called an ephemeris. So you can actually look up and you can see where the planets are going to be in hundreds of years from now. Because it is such an exact mechanism, this movement of the, it's such an exact orbit these planets are going in. Even our watch, which everyone knows, you don't take a watch, and we don't say it's just come about by accident or by some chance. We all know that this watch was manufactured by some person or by a group of persons and had to be somewhat, of course it's a pretty cheap watch, but it has to be somewhat accurate for at least a few years. So, if we look at the watch, which has to be manufactured by so many persons under so much control, but this watch only lasts for a few years and is only attempting to measure the exact orbit between the sun and the earth. Every 24 hours, the sun is in one position, the earth is in another position. And that goes on perpetually. So, this, the most intelligent person in this universe, according to these scriptures that we have, his name is Lord Brahma. And after observing this, he says, it's Chaksha Esha Savitasa Kalagrahana Rajasamasa Suramurtair Sheshateja Yas Yagaya Sambrita Kalachakra Govindam Adi Purusham Tamahang Bhajami. His conclusion, after observing the phenomena of the universe, is that he worships Krishna or Govinda. Govinda is another name for Krishna. And why? He says, Yats Chaksha Esha Savitasa Kalagrahana, that of all the different planets in this universe, the sun is the king. Why is it the king? Because its energies are Ashesha Teja. The sun has unlimited energy. As the scientists will tell us, that at every moment the sun is giving off more heat and light than all of human civilization has used, all the energy the human civilization has used since its beginning. Ashesha Teja, unlimited energy. And it is so powerful that it's not diminishing even after so many billions of years of its existence. But although it is so powerful, still, if we examine it, if we examine the earth, we'll find that the earth is in one position and the sun is in another position, even though the earth is supposed to be moving so rapidly through space. But if the earth moved a little closer to the sun, then immediately everything would burn up. We wouldn't have to bake our bread, everything would become baked. If the earth moved a little further away, we wouldn't have to worry about the cold weather because it would only be ice. It wouldn't be anything else. But although the earth is moving so rapidly in space, and according to the Vedas, also the sun is moving, still the earth and the sun are exactly in the same orbit to each other. For instance, if we go to India, we'll find that they have many bulls there. And sometimes they take the bull and they attach the bull to a pole by the nose. And they walk the bull around a ring. And the bull is carrying pulling a very heavy weight. And this way, that weight is crushing grains as the bull walks. But although this bull is so powerful, it's pulling a weight it would take 50 men to pull. Still, because it's attached by the nose, it cannot move 1 inch beyond the rope. In the same way, although the sun is so powerful, it is still held exactly in its place by the will of the superior power. And Lord Brahma says that superior power is Govinda. Govinda Krishna, he's the most intelligent person. He's the most powerful because by his intelligence and with his power, he can maintain all the planets exactly in their orbits, no matter how powerful the planets are. Therefore, in our experience, we can see that not only the planets are moving their orbits, but so many wonderful things are going on in the material world that Krishna says that I become the power of digestion and therefore, pachamyanam chaturvidam, I digest the four kinds of foodstuffs. So we're eating food, it's being digested, it's being assimilated, it's being eliminated. All these things which are going on without our conscious effort. So who is this? Krishna says that I am the fire of digestion. So Krishna has arranged the material world so nicely. Of course, nowadays in human society, sometimes we forget that. Because we've created an artificial world. There's one world, the natural world, and we've more or less rejected the natural order of things and tried to improve them by creating an artificial world. We're not satisfied with air, therefore we have air conditioning. If you go to modern buildings, I remember I used to distribute books at an airport in America called O'Hare Airport. Prabhupada wanted to change, he asked one of the devotees to ask him to change it to O'Hare Airport, or Hare Krishna Airport, but it was named. What's that? Hare Airport. But there, they had air conditioning, because everything's enclosed. But once in a while, every month or so, or every few months, they take off the ventilators and they change the filter. And you see that it's completely black. That actually the air in a building which is being air conditioned is so contaminated that it's almost inconceivable, you know, how much pollution one is breathing in as one is breathing in the so-called air conditioning. Actually the soul is conditioned enough, but somehow or another he wants to be even the air conditioned too. And not only air conditioning, but artificial light. artificial. Everything is artificial in present day society. But people think that this is progress the more they get away from something natural. Living in the cities without fresh air, without sunlight, without fresh produce or food, just like in Holland or in other countries, everything is shipped in from thousands of miles away. So in order to ship these foods in from thousands of miles away, they have to pick them when they're unripe, the fruits for instance, they have to spray them, and then they have to put coloring on it to make it look like it's all right, because otherwise no one would take it. They saw what the real color was. And they have to artificially try and ripen it, etc. So everything has become somewhat artificial, and we've forgotten what it's like actually to be more natural. What are the actual natural states of being? Not that we should go hungry or we should be cold, but modern society has created so many artificial necessities, and everyone's working hard to in order to be able to afford all these artificial things. In a more natural society, people are conscious that there is a Supreme Being, and that Supreme Being has arranged everything nicely, and that if we live simply, we won't suffer. Actually, we'll simply have less anxiety, and we'll actually be able to live in a higher standard of life. Clean water, which is more or less a theory nowadays, even you go to the store and you buy bottled water, still, at least one report I read, they said that even the bottled water is more contaminated a lot of times than even the water you get from the sink in most cities. And I know in America, in some places, they had problems because the water was so contaminated that in some areas the rivers were starting on fire by themselves. And they always had some problems, like radioactivity, there was some contamination. So if one can live more simply, accept the natural things in life, and recognize that these are actually more favorable towards our actual quality of life. That God has actually arranged everything here very nicely. There's no need for trying to make a better arrangement. Because the more we try to make a so-called better arrangement, the more generally the arrangements become simply problems that we have to solve by making other arrangements. But why are people making these arrangements? Because here it says that the conditioned soul, he wants to become the lord of the material nature. He doesn't recognize, number one, modern society does not give an education as to our spiritual being, that we are actually spiritual souls. And that there's a supreme spiritual being, a supreme spirit soul, who's actually the proprietor of everything here. And therefore, becoming conscious of him, we should work in order to please him. Without that consciousness, everyone is busily trying to create. Everyone is feeling some difficulty because this body means difficulty. We're experiencing all the time threefold types of suffering. Namely, the Daivi Klesha means, Daivatmika Klesha means that suffering is caused by the climate, by the weather. Just like usually it's too cold or there's some earthquake. Just like recently there was an earthquake. I'm sure everyone had some story to tell. How they woke up in the morning and suddenly everything was shaking. Which was only supposed to happen in Los Angeles or Peru or someplace like that. But it even happens here. And or it's this excessive rain, excessive cold. So these are miseries caused by the demigods, natural occurrences. And there are miseries caused by other living entities, Adibodhika Klesha. There are wars, there are bugs that are biting us, there are mosquitoes who are biting us, people are criticizing us, etc. And there's Adiyatmika Klesha, This body itself is miserable. Even trying to sit here, I'm still trying to sit here. My back will hurt me after some time. If my back doesn't hurt, then my legs are hurting. So even this body is inflicting so many miseries on us. If we don't have a cold, we don't have a backache, then we have a toothache or something else. But there's always some kind of misery afflicting us due to this body. So these miseries, as long as we remain attached to this body, attached to this mind, then we have to experience misery. Unfortunately, in modern civilization, there's not sufficient education how to focus our consciousness in something other than this mind, other than this body, a higher state of consciousness. And therefore, everyone is trying to make some adjustment in their material circumstances to become peaceful. But that won't work, because the material platform of experience by nature is not very peaceful, namely because even if we make an adjustment, we have a nice bank balance, we finally paid off our house, our children have given up taking drugs, now they're trying to get a good education. Even these things go on, still we have to die. Although no one puts that into their date book or their calendar, their time of death, but it's the fact that we all have an appointment to leave this body. Maybe today, or 5 minutes from now, or in 50 years. But the fact is that everyone has to die. And no one makes plans for when they're going to get sick, but somehow or another it happens. And even if we don't get sick, still old age gradually overtakes us. Our hair starts turning gray. We can't run as quickly as we used to, etc. So, birth, death, old age, disease. We say birth because we're spiritual beings, and according to the Vedas, after leaving this body, we have to take another body. And again, struggle to try to be happy, try to be peaceful, etc. Endlessly. So one has to change his consciousness from this material consciousness to another type of consciousness if we want to be peaceful. And here it mentions knowledge of Krishna. That there's another consciousness, knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that He is a person, according to the Vedas. He has a transcendental form, which is full of bliss and full of knowledge, and He's easily available to everyone. One can actually change one's consciousness from this body and this mind, from dwelling on it. One can actually change it to seeing things in relationship to Krishna, externally, with our eyes, understanding how everything is related to Krishna, how everything here is the property of Krishna or God, how everything here should be done to satisfy Krishna, and how the basic principle to satisfy Krishna is that He's the well-wisher of all living entities. Therefore, for instance, we ourselves, we follow four regular principles, because the idea is that we have a natural tendency of trying to take advantage of other living entities. We're trying to utilize other people for our own sense gratification. So this is called maya, or illusion. Thinking that we'll be happy by taking advantage of others. But our first principle is that we'll become happy by becoming a servant of Krishna, and by doing that, naturally will become a servant of others, because Krishna is a well-wisher of others. So we follow four principles. One is that we don't eat meat, fish or eggs, and whatever we eat, we offer first to Krishna. That we don't want to exploit the bodies of others. Everyone has to eat. That is mentioned, jagna shistashna shanto muchante karma kyobishai bhujante te dugam papa ye pajan yat makarana. That the devotees of the Lord, they're released from all kinds of sin because they offer food first for sacrifice. But others who eat food for their own sense gratification, they verily eat only sin. So knowing that Krishna is the proprietor of everything, whatever we eat, we offer first to Him. And since Krishna, He mentions fruits, vegetables, grains, etc. These are the things that we offer to Him, and we try and offer it with some love. Because actually that's what Krishna really wants, is our love. So by offering our food to Krishna, that which He wants, and not unnecessarily killing animals or other living entities. And we don't take intoxication because the conditioned soul, we're already intoxicated by this bodily conception of life. And when we take more intoxication, then we go a little bit more crazy. And we don't have illicit sex. The basic principle to squeeze enjoyment out of this body is sex life. But the more one tries to squeeze pleasure from this body by sex life, then the more he forgets his actual spiritual identity, the more he loses touch with his spiritual nature. Because, well, we don't say no sex life, because there is sex life with the marriage to produce children to raise them in Krishna consciousness or God consciousness. So sex life has a purpose, eating has a purpose, and we don't gamble. Because we don't think that the money we have belongs to us, everything we have belongs to Krishna, and therefore we should not unnecessarily gamble it away or speculate. Therefore, as it mentions here, there are certain principles that by performing them, one is able to remember Krishna more easily. That there are certain principles that free one from this tendency to forget our actual identity or forget our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by following the principles of Krishna consciousness, and then it helps us in every respect to control the influence of desire and anger and to remain absorbed in thinking of Krishna. The more one can come to this platform seeing things in relationship with Krishna, acting for Krishna, meditating on Krishna, thinking of Krishna. Krishna also has a form. As you see around here, there are different pictures of Krishna. So these forms of Krishna, the deities in the temple, the forms that are on these paintings, these are considered transcendental forms, that one can also think of these forms within himself. And by such forms, actually, one is actually, by such thinking, by such association, one is actually associating with Krishna himself. One can experience that by practice. How? By thinking of Krishna. How? By chanting his name. One is actually being elevated, purified, elevated in spiritual consciousness and purified of all misconceptions and all material contaminations. So if one practices this service to Krishna, following Krishna's directions, then one can remain, or one can gradually enter onto a spiritual platform of consciousness which he becomes free from all kinds of material misery, where he actually realizes more and more progressively his own spiritual identity, the things in relationship with the Supreme Person, who that Supreme Person is, and he becomes peaceful, and that peacefulness is the background for actual joyfulness. But, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that one who's not in such transcendental consciousness can have neither controlled mind nor steady intelligence, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? That as long as we remain in this material world, thinking ourselves to be the enjoyers and the controllers, puffed up with this conception, misidentifying ourselves with this body, hankering for false prestige as the controllers here, then, according to the laws of nature, our real intelligence is lost. As it says in the Bhagavad Gita, jayato vishayam punsam, sangasteshu bhajayate, sanjayate kama, kama krodo bhajayate. The law of material nature is that when we think ourselves to be the lords here, then as we contemplate such an idea, or we look at the objects of this material world with the idea of enjoying them, then immediately lust develops. And from lust, such lust, anger arises when we cannot fulfill our desires. For such anger comes delusion, forgetting our identities as spiritual beings. And such delusion, it comes bewilderment of memory. And from such bewilderment, intelligence is lost. And then we act in the material world for sense gratification, and we forget more and more our actual identities as a spiritual being. So one can counteract that by using one's intelligence, by trying to understand things in relationship with the actual Supreme Lord here, trying to become his servant, actually practically serving Him according to His directions, either by chanting in this age. The service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead especially begins with the tongue. Atak Shri Krishna Namadi Na Braved Grayam Indriyai Seva Mukhehi Divado Swayam Eva Spratida. Service begins with Jivado. Jiva means tongue. How to serve God with the tongue? It is possible by chanting this Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And offering our food to Krishna and then eating it. No one can realize Krishna fully as long as our senses are contaminated by this desire to enjoy matter, as long as our minds and intelligence, our minds are contaminated by desires to enjoy here in the material world, and our intelligence is full of misconceptions and doubts. But these things can be purified, our mind, intelligence, and senses, by the practice of Krishna consciousness. And by such practice, one can actually realize Krishna. So this is what's recommended in this verse. And by doing so, if one follows it, it's guaranteed that if he follows it intelligently, trying to understand the process as clearly as possible, and dedicating some part of his life in a practical way to following these directions, then the result is sure that one will realize his spiritual identity as a spiritual being. One will realize Krishna. One will understand one's relationship with Krishna. One will become peaceful and fully happy eternally. So, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Yeah. Yeah, we should find out how to offer you food. There's a way of offering you food. Of course, Krishna, he accepts the sincerity of the offering more than anything else. But in order to be sincere, we should follow certain principles which will help us increase our sincerity. So there are certain methods of offering to Krishna that will help us increase our sincerity in actually trying to please Him by the offering. And God, He has everything. Here in the material world, we make friends with people because we hope they'll give us something. And we become adverse to others because we're afraid they'll take something away from us. But Krishna, He has no friends or enemies in the material world because He owns everything. Therefore, no one can take anything away from Him, nor can anyone give Him anything. But still, He's the real well-wisher of everyone, and therefore the only thing He actually desires from us is our love. But love means, first of all, we have to become aware of who we love. We can't love someone that we don't even know who they are. If I say that I was madly in love with some girl, but I didn't know where she lived, I didn't know what her name was, I didn't know what she looked like, I didn't know anything about her, but somehow or another, by some miracle, I had developed spontaneous, overwhelming love for her. And I was going to dedicate everything to her, wherever she is.
When I find out her
telephone number, I'll call her up too. But this is not very practical. That love means that you have to know the person you love, and there must be some reason for loving Him. So first, we should know about who Krishna is, what He's doing, where He lives, what our relationship with Him is. And then after finding out about these things, when we find out that He expects us as human beings to offer our food to Him, otherwise we're in trouble. Just like, for instance, if someone is in the society and he steals something, then at least theoretically the police is supposed to come and arrest him. So Krishna has a much bigger police force. It's everywhere. And as soon as we take his energy unlawfully,
without properly offering it to him as he asks us to, then we become arrested by illusion. And we become subjected to the reactions of what we're doing. But on the other hand, therefore Krishna expects every human being to offer his food to him. Of course, in every tradition it's the same thing. Christianity, there's offering of food. In Judaism, there's offering of food to God. And so the difference is that here, at least, is a clearer conception of who God is and the fact that he wants our love in the offering. And Krishna explains very clearly exactly what kind of food he'll accept. So if we do that, and we try to offer, to cook the food to please him and offer it to please him, then the result is that actually we'll feel our love increasing. Our awareness of Krishna will increase. And as we become aware of Krishna, who's the source of all love, as well as all other good qualities, such as beauty, knowledge, fame, renunciation. So as we become aware of Krishna, as we become aware of how nice he is, then automatically the whole atmosphere in our house and in our consciousness will change. So if we try to follow the method of worship and try to, everyone has a tendency to love, it says that we don't know where to direct our loving propensity in such a way that the object of my love that I'm trying to love will be able to reciprocate with my love in such a way as to increase it more and more. So Krishna, he's perfect. He's the source of all love, and he's perfectly capable of accepting our love, whatever it is, and then reciprocating in such a way as to increase our loving propensity even more. So by even offering some food to Krishna, Krishna will accept the offering and will reciprocate with us in such a way that we become more encouraged to offer not only food, but everything to Krishna. So that's something practical. One can try it out and see what the result is. It's not that in India, for instance, for thousands and thousands of years they've been doing this and they've just been doing it blindly without any reciprocation. Sometimes they think that the deities in the temple are idol worship. But one should not think that for thousands of years, millions of people have been visiting the deities in India and they've been fooled. It's simply some ritual. But actually, if one tries to follow the Vedic process and to, with the ultimate objective of developing his love for Krishna, for instance, in the form of the deity, one will actually experience how the deity can is a person, will actually reciprocate with one. One can actually experience the change of one's, one can actually experience that. So similarly, offering food to Krishna, following the prescribed process, one will actually see how he's actually experiencing, how his relationship with God, he's becoming more aware of his relationship with God, and how he's developing more and more love for God. Anything else? Stuff here. Thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.